When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to an epic and unexpected edition of the David Odyssey Show. I had been prepping another topic for this edition, but it's Passover, which always makes me think about the Age of Aries. And I like to get into the Age of Aries and the Age of Taurus and talk about ancient Egypt and the Jews because Passover is my favorite. But I realized that could be a great podcast. So let's zoom out. I am today going to be talking about ages in astrology. When we talk about the age of Aquarius, what are we talking about? How long does that last? What does that mean? Are we in it? Are we in another age? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So these ages last thousands and thousands of years. I'm going to explain what they are. And I'm going to kind of take us through the whole saga thus far in terms of the entire history of the human race. So listen, as we say in 12-step, take what you like and leave the rest. This, as with all David Odyssey podcasts, is meant to be pleasurable. There are podcasts about astrology that are for dorks. I hope this is not one of them. So listen, your job is to sit back and enjoy. If you are chopping vegetables and listening to this, I don't care. I will be the one who takes us through about 8,000 years of human history. So just go along for the ride. You don't really need to know. There's a lot of like scientific, astrological mumbo jumbo. Who cares? Okay, it's all about the ideas and the archetypes and where it's bringing us in the future, right? So let me just kind of break this all down. We are talking about ages in astrology. So to zoom out, when we think about astrology, we're thinking about the orbit of the planets, the orbit of the Earth, how these are all affecting us on the kind of individual personal level. The Earth itself has its own orbit and its own kind of makeup. And if you really want to think big, you can observe where the Earth, which sign the Earth is falling in on its larger rotation. So the Earth is part of the ecliptic, which is the orbit around the sun. The Earth has its own equator, as we know, which we can then extend out into space. When the Earth's equator, and again, none of this matters, okay, just so you know. When the Earth's equator and the ecliptic, this orbital field around the plane, meet, we have something called an equinox. So equinoxes happen twice a year. We have equinoxes and solstices. Where those equinoxes are happening is going to be marking the Earth's kind of starting point on this longer rotation. So for thousands of years at a time, the Earth will be in one, we'll have all of its equinoxes in one sign. In our time, the Earth does this in, we have the spring equinox and the fall equinox. So it's in Aries and Libra, right? But where these go, these tend to shift over many, many years, taking about 72 years per degree. It takes about 2,000 years for the equinoxes to shift. So we can think about wherever these equinoxes are as kind of the place that the planet is in. Again, this is all a little heady, but if you just want to think about it in terms of big picture, the Earth itself moves through the signs. We're not talking about the Sun or Venus. We're thinking about the Earth itself as its starting point. Each time it does a rotation around the Sun, it's starting in a different place in a different sign. So it takes about 26,000 1,000 years for this saga to make a full revolution. So these periods where the Earth is in a theoretically different sign with the equinoxes, you got the idea, are called great ages. They last about 2,000-ish years, and each one we use to understand the evolution of larger human consciousness. So when we talk about the age of Aquarius, that is not like a year or a decade or 100 years. That is estimated to be a 2,000-ish year period, starting, and this is debatable, in the year 2160, but I have some thoughts on that. So the other thing to note, which is a pain in the ass with all of this, is that these move backwards. So we're currently in the age of Pisces, we were in the age of Aries, and before that we were in the age of Taurus. So again, don't get too fixated on the heady aspects of this. The thing to think about is, if we're looking at the collective cultural evolution of humankind, we are looking at it through these 2,000-year chapters, each of which goes backwards through the zodiac. So to begin, first of all, we'll start with a kind of Cancer Gemini. The age of Gemini would theoretically have been the year 6,000 to 4,000 BCE. And I swear this is going to get more interesting as we catch. Actually, no, it's already very interesting, but we're going to be catching up to where we are in the present. So if you've read The Dawn of Everything, I think it's by David Graeber and David something something, they talk a lot about how our understanding of human development is totally flawed. And this idea that we used to be savages and then we evolved, is very post-Enlightenment. And in actuality, like, you can't really place human development as a planet in any sort of a linear framework. And their whole thing is this kind of bullshit notion of, well, we were cavemen then. Actually, some tribes were extremely advanced. Some were doing some things here. Some were doing things other things here. So just to begin, when we think about Gemini, which is all about this sort of, like, duality and chaos and holding multiple truths at once, I kind of love that for the age of Gemini, which is we understand that language, crafts, skills are starting to emerge in a really tangible way. But it's hard for us to put any sort of a linear container on it, which is what Gemini is. Gemini is the sign of language. Gemini is also the sign of I have to hold all these things as true. If, like Shirley MacLaine, you want to believe that there were ancient, hyper-advanced civilizations like Atlantis, fuck yeah, and that would be a bit in the Cancer Gemini framework. I don't really have a lot of information on those. I totally believe in them, but that would be kind of way back then. Then we get cooking with gas. So the age of Taurus, which is said to be 4220 to 2160 before Common Era, and this is where the Passover story is going to come in, and this is kind of why I got inspired to do this podcast, so just stick with me. The age of Taurus. Taurus, we are thinking of me, the bull. Bulls being these symbols of fertility, right? Bulls tilling the land. They are either sacrificial or not to be touched, if we think about, you know, ancient Egypt or to Hindu traditions. The bull represents life and sex incarnated. You know, we've talked about this before, but we think about the crescent moon, the fallopian tubes, the bull's horns. That's a dear friend of the pod, Henry Kapersky, is rereading Mists of Avalon, and we were talking about, yeah, that the crescent moon is when shit goes down, and when, you know, if you're one of the women of Mists of Avalon, you might be having sex with your brother while he's wearing a horn god outfit, and, you know, you're fucking on the altar, you know. So Taurus, as this sign of incarnation and fertility, deals a lot with the idea of the divine being brought to form. So again, when we think about something like Gemini, we're thinking a lot about these abstract ideas And the reason why Gemini and Taurus, we often are turned on by each other, but more often than that, we clash is because Gemini is all about the idea. Taurus is all about the tangible. So when we're thinking about the age of Taurus, we're thinking about these ideas of godhood brought to the form of man and beast. So the kind of like high T of the age of Taurus would be the Egyptians. You know, in Alan Oken's Complete Astrology, he talks so much about the idea of the Nile and this land being fertile and this kind of non-nomadic situation and building this opulent, over the top kind of Venusian society is all very Taurus, Taurus, Taurus. Obviously, the fixation with the death cults of Egypt deals a lot with Scorpio, which is Taurus's opposite. But if you've read Camille Paglia, my favorite part of Sexual Persona is when she's talking about the ancient Egyptians, because she says that the ancient Egyptians were the first beautiful people. And she says, of course, beauty is power and power is beauty. And she also basically says, look, the pharaoh wasn't just like some elected official. The pharaoh was God. And these people needed to look like gods. So this idea of glamour and makeup comes in with the age of Taurus. We're thinking about the idea of the divine projection of the body. Of course, in the age of Taurus, we're getting ancient Greece. We're seeing the arrival of the Hindu pantheon as well. The Hindu pantheon is a bit more in the Aries domain, but we're starting to see these things cooking, right? And of course, with the Hindu pantheon, cows are quite big. But we're also thinking about this idea of a hierarchy and an immovable authority, which is really embodied most by the pharaoh. And even with the Greek gods, you know, the Greek gods are not, they are always having sex with mortals and they're fixated on mortals and they are dependent on us, but they're above us. And they're quite ambivalent to us. A lot of gods in this time are very, this is a hard thing for us to understand in the modern age. A lot of gods in this time are quite ambivalent to the rest of us. That's a Taurian thing, which is like these ideas of superiority and supremacy, which are playing out now that we're in a big Taurus era right now with Jupiter and Uranus in Taurus. We're seeing this huge rise of authoritarianism that we've talked a lot about, because there is this aspect of I am God, you are not, or they're God, we are not, right? All of this goes, of course, to the age of Aries. In Passover, which is, I gotta say, like, we really have some banger holidays, and I really am a child of the springtime. To go from Purim to Passover, it really is just like sleigh after sleigh, you know what I mean? Passover is the story of the Israelites or the Hebrews launching out of Egypt, launching out of bondage. And Passover is also kind of the marking of the dawn of monotheism. Obviously, monotheism had existed beforehand and even in the Jewish history. You know, Abraham had been, you know, moving and grooving for a while before the Passover story. But all of this really fits, you know, it's not to say that Passover is historically the start, you know, that the liberation of the Jews from Egypt is the historic start of the age of Egypt, but it is kind of the definitive thing, because the Egyptians, who are polytheistic pagan cultists, and the Jews, who are monotheists, are having this kind of epic clash. And of course, the Egyptians who worship the bull and the Jews who take the ram's horn and who take the ram's blood and splash it on their doors to demarcate us so that the angel of death does not cross over. So that the angel of death passes over our houses and goes and kills the Egyptians, which is totally fucked up. Lulu and I last year rewatched The Prince of Egypt, and it's gorgeous. We talked a lot about this. Stephen Schwartz did the music, and it's DreamWorks, it's not Disney. Stephen Schwartz is so not... Like, if you look at the Disney music, which is also of the 90s, which is, by the way, the reason Disney movies aren't good now is because they're not made by Jews. Disney music in the 90s, all those musicals are written by Jews. They have this very... And gay men. They have this very, like... pop culture, bitchy Joan Rivers sensibility. Stephen Schwartz, Lulu's whole thing is like, it's too earnest. That said, it's a gorgeous, gorgeous movie. And yeah, anytime I think about Miriam, Song of the Sea, I get emotional. So we'll have to unpack that in another episode. But the Jews, the Israelites, when they launch out of Egypt, the first big hurdle is the Golden Calf episode, which is a lot of Israelites long for the idol, the altar, the kind of tangible thing. Because, you know, I'll say this, the Hebrew religion is all about text and law. But in terms of the aesthetic or the visual, it's you know, something is left to be desired. You could say this about Islam, too. I think a lot of where Islam kind of evolved or adapted so beautifully is in this development of things like sacred geometry or math or architecture, where they were able to take these kind of divine concepts and apply them into... an aesthetic vocabulary that does not involve, you know, the face of God. It's pretty genius because our faiths, unlike Christianity, etc., we're not allowed to show the face of the divine, which is why we don't have like a sexy anyone in our temples. Anyways, we're understanding with the age of Aries. Aries is the sign of individualism and of launching forward. And when the Israelites are craving to worship that bull or that icon, they get punished for it because this new god really needs things to be more linear and he can't really have competition. He can't really have that sort of paganistic multiplicity, which is kind of too bad. But with the Age of Aries, we're starting to understand what does it mean to be an individual. The Age of Aries is also leading us to a kind of a new understanding of united religious forces that have kind of a singular identity. We see the awakening of the Nation of Islam, and within the kind of Greco-Roman realm, we see Alexander the Great come, and it all leads up to Rome and Caesar, right? So we also begin to see the Buddha emerging. The Buddha is going to be closer to Pisces, so I'll talk about him in a second. But the other thing to think about with Aries is we're now going into the age of conquest. So the Israelites, who are these victims who leave Egypt, eventually become these kind of, they wander for a long time, and then they become conquerors. The Romans are going into this as well. Egypt is going to get embroiled in all sorts of conflicts and wars. So when we get to the age of Aries, we're entering an age of war and kind of martial conflict. Which, you know, it's just kind of the way that things shifted. It became more, Aries is a lot about, I'm the victim, you're the aggressor, which always leads to, I'm the aggressor, you're the victim, da da da. You know, there is this kind of duality and this relationality. Taurus is a little bit more in itself. Aries is a little bit more, we have a divine calling, we're the ones, we're chosen, we have to go out and show them, which we see with the Israelites, with Islam, etc. The other thing that's interesting about this Aries evolution is, I've been thinking about this a lot. Human sacrifice used to be a thing for a long time, and eventually it got kind of like, it was decided to be a little bit passé or not so savory. So in the Roman arena, we find gladiators, which is basically another form of human sacrifice, but it
involves combat as if that makes it better. And it's kind of a, there's this lust for destruction or assimilation, right? Now that that's been, that actually hasn't been disbanded. So we're still dealing with that, not just in like boxing or chicken fights, but you know, Drag Race, whenever people complain that drag shouldn't be competitive, human beings still want to see the human sacrifice. And on Drag Race, if that means seeing a queen get eliminated for her lip sync, it's the same concept, right? The thing I wanted to say about Aries that I've kind of been hinting at, you know, the Israelites are the children of Aries. And I think a big thing that's haunted us, and I think that's haunted a lot of pretty much any faith or community, is this idea of we're the outsiders, we're the other. So if we want to get a little revenge or take what's ours, it's warranted. And this is something that the Israelites have always, the Jews, we've always struggled with. And I think that the same could probably be said for Islam, for Christianity, etc. This idea of, well, we were rejected and we know what it's like to be exiled. When we take power, fuck everybody. Aries has this really intense relationship with, you know, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Sarah Michelle Gellar is an Aries, and her, you know, Buffy's whole thing is, I want to fit in, I want to be a normal girl. And it's like, do you? And also, once you have the power, what happens? Are you going to use it justly? Are you going to become like your oppressor? Are you going to become an oppressor of your own? Of course, these questions are hovering around this Passover specifically. You know, I'd be remiss to not be thinking about that. From Aries, we then head into the age of Pisces. So, as we're nearing the end of Aries, we see figures like Buddha or Zoroaster who are kind of saying, like, you know, Buddha's whole thing is like, look, this has gotten to be a lot of labor. And it's kind of like, we need to get down to the basics, which is like, this isn't about the law or the ritual. You know, by the way, Aries opposite is Libra. So when we think about the age of Aries, we're also thinking about law and scripture. Libra rules all of that. So, you know, the Hebrews, and also certainly this is very much a Quranical thing. We're a lot about law. Buddha was kind of like, we need to get to the good stuff and we need to get to source. God should be accessible to anyone through enlightenment, not through any divine lineage or anything like that. Which leads us to 1 Anno Domini and the launch of the Age of Pisces, which pretty much Jesus is the superstar of this, obviously. Jesus basically says, like, great, let's cut everything. Here's God, here's you, we're all one. I am God, but you don't need to treat me like a pharaoh. I don't need anything special. Of course, Pisces is the sign, you know, Pisces rules the feet. Jesus is walking around barefoot. Pisces, we have the two fish. We're thinking about Jesus and Judas. They're kind of going in opposite directions. So with Pisces, we do get the kind of peace and love aspect of Piscean collective, you know, spiritual consciousness. That sounds good. However, Pisces is going to be marked by the martyrdom of Jesus. Pisces is about this idea of suffering and sacrifice in order to attain that higher kind of connection with the divine. This is going to be setting up a lot of issues for a while. We see Pisces, there's a lot about connection and unity. Pisces is also, because it's about those waters, those oceans, there's a lot that deals with disillusion and things kind of withering away and falling apart. So there's a lot of kind of tragedy in the Piscean era. Of course, with the Mayans kind of emerge in Aries, and their rise and fall will go into the age of Pisces. The Mayans, who are so tapped into prophecy, we don't know really why the Mayan Empire fell apart, but it's speculated that it's infighting or maybe environmental damage, which made, you know, such an empire unsustainable. But this is a sort of Piscean thing. The idea, it's hard for me as a Jew, and this is going to make me sound so juvenile, but you know, when I watch Elizabeth with Cate Blanchett and it's talking about the Protestants versus the Anglicans, it's hard for me to understand. To me, they're all Christians, and I'm saying, oh, there's infighting within them. And by the way, if you think there is any sort of monolithic way of being Jewish, trust me, you are really in for it. So, and even with Pisces, you know, even when we look at India, when we understand like the fate of India and Pakistan, it's so crazy. We think about this sort of inner self-sabotage within all of these lands or faiths or communities. This is going to be a big feature of the Age of Pisces, because the Age of Pisces starts out so simply, which is like Buddha and Jesus rock and roll, but it goes into so much of the self-sabotage that Pisces is known for, and the two fish, this constant, well, within me there's an endless battle going on, right? The other aspects of the Age of Pisces, so the Age of Pisces is AD 1, and it's theoretically still going. The Age of Pisces, we really do get these new kind of psychedelic ideas. We see art emerging in a way that it never has before, in these the way that art or faith or ideas can touch not just someone in a town or a city or a land, but the whole world. We're understanding the human race is now one, which is going to be big. Hello. Pisces is all about that oneness, which is kind of what Jesus was, you know, pushing, right? He wasn't saying there's a chosen people, there isn't. He's saying we're all children. You need to feed all the homeless people because they're one. We're all one, right? So that's beautiful on one hand. And if you're lucky enough to be alive now, you can be exposed to everything in a way that hasn't existed before, right? You can be exposed to the greatest art in history that exists on your phone. You can be listening and viewing beautiful podcasts, and they can go anywhere, right? That said, we also see the Spanish conquerors bringing disease to the many indigenous peoples of the New World. We see plagues. We see genocide. We see world wars. We see a level of human suffering that would be inconceivable previously, because we are now thinking so big. And again, this is the tragedy of the Age of Pisces, is that level of helplessness, which makes us all into martyrs, because Pisces is very much about, I'm going to hang on the cross. And, you know, I have to say, like, if you were to say, like, look at what's going on in the Middle East right now, I don't think it's not fair. I know that sounds really juvenile, but it's not fair for any one human being to have to grapple with what is going on a political, global, greed-influenced, militaristic level. These are such big convergences that have been building over decades, and it's cruel. You know, Buffy says, I don't want to live in this world if these are the choices. These forces like capitalism or plastic or war are huge. They're God-sized at this point, and it makes it really difficult for the one human being to take any action or to feel like they have agency. We are now shifting into the Aquarian Age. So I love Alan Oaken says that the transition between ages, you can think of it like puberty, which is like, there isn't like a start date when the puberty happens. I mean, obviously if you are assigned female at birth and you have a period, that's one thing, but it's kind of like this weird liminal shitty period or shitty transition era or phase. that you can say, all right, it was around age 14, 15, but you can't say it started here and it ended here. So that's what's going on with the age of Aquarius. It's officially said that it would start the year 2160. Others have said that with the discovery of Uranus in 1781, I think, Uranus being the planet of new technology and revolution and youth culture, that Uranus rules Aquarius, that set off the age of Aquarius. I could also say Pluto's current placement in Aquarius, which is going to be 2023 through like 2040, might be a harbinger. So the point is, we're kind of already in the age of Aquarius. You know, Ruby, when she and I taught a course on Uranus, she was talking about, you know, once we discovered Uranus after 1780, everything exploded. Not just these Enlightenment ideals, but this hyper transmission of ideas, art, medicine. And, you know, we do take that for granted. I've talked about this on this podcast, but it's like, just in the last 10 years, we got PrEP. That didn't exist beforehand. Now we have PrEP. Now I can have a lot of sex, and a lot of the things I grew up with, a lot of the stigma I grew up with, is gone. It's not fixed. But these sort of quantum leaps are now more commonplace than they used to be. And Alan Oaken talks a lot about, like, if you wanted to get information for most of, you know, time, if you wanted to get information around, it was like by a pigeon or by foot or by word of mouth. Now it's everywhere. Aquarius rules the circulatory system. So Aquarius rules the transmission, the radio waves, the dispensation, dissemination of knowledge. Aquarius, Pisces is the sign of the collective, kind of the collective soul. Aquarius is more about the collective society. So Aquarius is dealing a lot more with the ideas of equality, communalism, personhood, what should be, the way things should be, kind of utility or utopianism. Pisces is saying, you know, God is, as we say in Course in Miracles, God is but love and therefore so am I. Aquarius is saying, yeah, but how is that going to be distributed fairly? Karl Marx, Aquarius rising, Taurus, led us to a big Aquarian leap, which is communism. Communism, we don't really know what communism could be like because it was its first century or so has not been great. And it's definitely been interfered with. So what it could have been and what it is, again, there's a very Aquarian thing of what something is in theory and what it is in praxis. This is a big, big Aquarian issue. We don't really know. But communism, as it happens, the issue with it is that it's a one-size-fits-all. It kills the idea of, you know, human originality, or I have a soul, or this is me, or this is where I go, and it puts everything into these idealistic blocks. And as much as internet culture is supposedly inclusive, it usually is prescriptive, which means it's saying, this is the way it is, you have to fit in this, and we see this thing going kind of like rubber band. The ideal of an age of Aquarius is an age in which ideas of money or personhood or obviously gender or what we're doing on this planet really get to be hashed out and taken into a new direction. You know, if you read someone like Shulamit Firestone with The Dialectic of Sex, which, you know, that's not really like bathtub reading. But if you read Donna Haraway with Cyborg Feminism, there's a lot of these questions about what is a body and why does it need to do these things that we've said it needs to do? What would a human race look like if we were divorced from a lot of these archaic institutions and ideas? You know, this influences, you know, what is life on a kibbutz like? And we're going to be seeing a lot more of this as we enter forthright into the age of Aquarius. We're going to be seeing more of these sort of kind of collectives, these units. That's good. It just becomes an issue when it gets enforced. A lot of the terror of China is, you know, they have a social credit score. There's the idea that a human's life can be kind of turned into data. And that is at stake here with the Age of Aquarius. What is interesting about this, first of all, is as we become a collective consciousness, what does that look like? The internet itself may represent a nascent collective consciousness. It is a kind of an evolving organism which collects everything we've had thus far. I'm not saying it's done a great job or it's in a good state, but the idea that all of this could be poured into one is definitely a fixture of the age of this transition from Age of Pisces to Age of Aquarius, which is to say, what if this thing itself, and this is the question we're asking about with AI, what if this thing itself had its own consciousness and that was the mosaic or the composite of all the separation? When you think fifth dimensionally, if you think about higher beings, you know, you can read any Grant Morrison comic. Grant Morrison is, of course, an Aquarius with Saturn in Aquarius. If you read any Grant Morrison comic, there's always a collision with these sort of higher entities, which are looking at this reality as one, thinking about, oh, I'm not looking at planet Earth with these people on it. I'm thinking of the collective consciousness of this one being on this reality. So we are heading in that direction. However, all of that's still really fucked up and it hasn't been so purified to allow for a free evolution of a singular consciousness, because even the means of this technology are ruled by, you know, these losers in the tech world. I mean, come on. But if you read X-Men comics, we also look at things called dominions, which are these kind of a whole civilization becomes one giant super being, right? The thing that I've been thinking about a lot lately is through all of these ages, the big question is God. What form is God taking? Where is God? A lot of the world right now is not secular, and a lot of the world that I'm in, a lot of the Western world, is very secular. So you have a lot of people who don't really have an active relationship or lexicon when it comes to God. At the same time, you can observe all of us when we want information or an answer, we turn to our phone or Google. It's become really common for someone to just say, well, it says here that, which means to say we believe that through Google or through some sort of a collective information network, there's an answer to everything we seek. That can obviously be a delusional false trust when you are reading something on Google Chrome that is not verified, or on TikTok when you're getting astrological news that's total gibberish. But we are seeking God in the collective hive mind. We are seeking God in this thing called the internet. We are seeking an answer or security or understanding there. That seeking or that quest is not a bad thing. It means we still need to be comforted and that we're not so okay. I think the issue is, hear the birdie birds, I think the issue is, are we putting faith in something without realizing it? And what if that faith could be more intentional? You know, if your faith is not in a G-O-D God, but in something more collective, what could be built to represent that that's not just like a stream? The drip-drip Novocaine streaming thing is going to be the end of the Age of Pisces. What comes next is going to be a little bit more about information. A hallmark of kind of Uranian or Aquarian culture to me will always be raves, because raves are about this kind of psychedelic contact with God, but through this very hard, ecstatic, like rough form of dance. So God is there, and God is kind of revealing what form he wants to take. I don't know that it's going to be through art. I think Pisces, the age of Pisces has been the great peak of art. We're going into information, but what information means, I don't know. Ideas, though, the exchange of ideas could be really exciting during this period. You know, when I'm thinking about all this, in Captain Marvel, there's the Kree, who it's this other alien species, and they have something called the Supreme Intelligence. That's kind of their god. And if you see the bad Captain Marvel movie, I actually like the sequel more than the original. I like the sequel. But if you see the first one with Brie Larson, Annette Bening plays the Supreme Intelligence. Okay. I think that's what we're going towards. As we head into this age of Aquarius, which I think has kind of already begun, we want to be thinking about what is the exchange and what is the ideal, what is not tenable, and what is in fact oppressive and restrictive, even though it is under the auspice of so-called liberation, .. Okay. The other thing that I just want to really kind of put forward that I've been talking about, you know, I've been talking so much about God and religion. A lot of what this is, and, you know, if you're an atheist, that's of course celebrated. When you're in a 12-step program, you're dealing with the higher power. You're dealing with, okay, my whole life I've put my faith in alcohol or in this or in this. As we are shifting into a new age, the question is, where have we put God in our personal life? Where is the thing? Where is the higher power or the thing that's bigger than us that we're seeking comfort or love or support from? That is going to be the most interesting thing, I think, to contemplate on a personal level. I would love to hear your thoughts on all of this. Thank you for this history, for going on this history lesson with me. And, you know, I assume I've made a lot of mistakes, so please let me know. And, you know, just know that it's all done with love. And I have no intention of either excluding anyone or, you know what I mean. Please become a paid supporter on my Substack. That is one of the best ways to directly support me, because I do this Substack and this podcast on my own steam. And feel free to send me a Venmo, David_Odyssey. You are welcome to tip me at any time. And book a reading. Readings for May are now up and available. So all of this is on my Instagram. It's on the Substack, .. You know where to find it. It's all linked up here. So thank you for joining me, and I will see you on the other side. Mwah.